Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Hi, I'm Alex Soros. As the son of a Holocaust survivor and a Jew, I am acutely aware of the dangers of anti-Semitism. I'm also proudly married to a Muslim American. Discrimination and hate aren't abstract concepts to me or my family. They're deeply personal and have been persistent throughout our lives. Today, the Open Society Foundations are committing $30 million to organizations fighting anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim hate around the United States and across the world. At a moment like this, we need to stand together and act. This investment is about keeping people safe and pushing back against hate.
While hundreds of thousands of Hungarian Jews were being shipped off to the death camps, George Soros accompanied his phony godfather on his appointed rounds, confiscating property from the Jews.
These are pictures from 1944 of what happened to George Soros' friends and neighbors.
You're a Hungarian Jew who escaped the Holocaust by posing as a Christian.
Right.
And you watched lots of people get shipped off to the death camps.
Right. I was 14 years old. And I would say that that's when my character was made.
In what way?
That one should think ahead, one should understand and anticipate events, and one is threatened. It was a tremendous threat of evil. I mean, it was a very personal experience of evil.
My understanding is that you went out with this protector of yours who swore that you were his adopted godson.
Yes.
Went out, in fact, and helped in the confiscation of property from the Jews.
That's right. Yes.
I mean, that sounds like an experience that would send lots of people to the psychiatric couch for many, many years. Was it difficult?
Not at all. Not at all. Maybe as a child, you don't see the connection. But it created no problem at all.
No feeling of guilt?
No.
For example, that I'm Jewish, and here I am watching these people go, I could just as easily be there, I should be there, none of that.
Well, of course, I could be on the other side, or I could be the one from whom the thing is being taken away. But there was no sense that I shouldn't be there, because that was well, actually, funny way, it's just like in markets, that if I weren't there, of course I wasn't doing it, but somebody else would be taking it away anyhow. In other words, whether I was there or not, I was only a spectator, the property was being taken away. So I had no role in taking away that property. So I had no sense of guilt.
Are you religious?
No.
Do you believe in God?
No. It was actually probably the happiest year of my life, that year of German occupation. For me, it was a very positive experience. It's a strange thing, you know, because you see incredible suffering around you, and in fact, you are in considerable danger yourself. But you're 14 years old, and you don't believe that it can actually touch you. You have a belief in yourself, your belief in your father. It's a very happy-making, exhilarating experience.
I really do miss hearing that Alex Jones fella since they took away his show.
Well, hell, they done took that away, but he was back at work the very next day at Alex Jones Live.
Well, that's good to hear.
Well, all you need to do is go to alexjoneslive.com, and there you can watch the show, or go to Rumble and look for AJN Live, and he's also on X at AJN Live.
Do you think I'm going to sell you something that doesn't really work? I always ask people, they never know the answer, even salesmen. I go, who's the best salesman? Who's the smartest salesman? Who are the most successful salesmen? The best salesman, a smart salesman, goes and finds what is the hottest, best product that's in demand. It sells itself. I promote freedom. I promote liberty. I promote what I think is good. My marketing strategy, if I like something and think it's great and I research it, I push it on you. You are insane if you don't get our ultra methylene blue, the very best doctor. You're insane if you don't get our methylene red. You're crazy if you don't do bovine colostrum. In fact, I realized the first few months I took that, I got busy. It ran out. I didn't get more. I just remember that, found some, was taking it last night. So good for your hair, your nails, your eyes, your whole body. It's the first 2 weeks of the milk a cow puts out, and any mammal does. It is super nutrient, incredible. You're crazy if you don't take these products. They really work, and they fund the operation.
Welcome to the fourth hour of Alex Jones Live. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of jaysanalysis.com, also YouTube, Jay Dyer, also X, Jay Dyer. I got a great interview very recently, actually multiple interviews with the esteemed whistleblower and former CIA operative, John Kiriakou. And in that interview, I kind of went point by point, bringing up the most sort of controversial and debated topics in terms of what is really going on in the intelligence world, and what are the busy bee operatives of the intelligence establishment out there doing to supposedly save our country, to make it safe, and to help America not be attacked by terrorists, and all the really childish narratives that we hear. And one of the questions I asked, which I thought was really pertinent to information that recently surfaced with the Epstein files, was in fact whether or not the West uses sexual ops as a way to entrap and blackmail people. Now, we all know that this has come to the fore with the Epstein files and with the Epstein revelations. And that seems to really vindicate the criticism that many had over the decades that, you know, the West is not really free from this corrupt practice. For many, many years, we were told that it's really just the Soviets that do this, right? Basically, only the Soviets, maybe the Chinese, the KGB, the NKVD, they're the really the only ones that are proficient and that use this regularly. You'll see people like Andrew Bustamante, who goes all over YouTube, and he defends the West by saying that we don't do that because there's laws in place that protect people's civic rights when they join something like the CIA or whatever. Of course, the way to get around that is to just simply farm it out to other entities. For example, in the famous Operation Midnight Climax, which is part of the MKUltra experiments, the CIA farmed that job out to organized crime, and they got the prostitutes to report on what happened when they just randomly dosed their Johns without the Johns' notice. So that was all part of a sub-project, a study within the umbrella corporation of MKUltra and all of its projects over a few decades. Now, MKUltra might have gotten shut down, but again, we know that that just got renamed and moved to other places and classified under other projects like biowarfare with MKSearch, MKDelta. But I do want to talk about the history of sex ops and sex espionage, because it's such a powerful tool in the arsenal of the enemy of civilization, or the enemies of civilization that are out there. And most governments in history have utilized this technique and this practice. It's kind of a silent, winked at secret, even though everybody sort of knows it. We've been told, though, that it doesn't actually go on because we're the good guys and we would never do that. But in actual fact, the people that run the West utilize underage compromise quite often. And that's unfortunate. So we're going to be talking about this book that I've covered in the past, which is Donald Boer's History of Sexpionage. It's a mainline history text. It's not a conspiracy book, so there's no tinfoil hat accusation that you could make. in the modern era, people that got really good at this were, in fact, Soviets. And so the KGB, Stalin's NKVD, they were very proficient at this. And this is pretty well known, pretty recognized. And there have been many famous cases of NKVD compromise. They use swallows or ravens, right, in terms of how to entrap people who are desperate or perhaps people that have a weakness or some flaw in their character or in their life. We know, for example, in the case of the Vatican, and I've been studying this more recently, there's a lot of new texts that have come out about Gladio, about Benedict XVI stepping down, books like Vatican Spies, which we're going to be talking about soon, all relating back, of course, to Gladio and the usage of the Vatican Bank by the CIA and other entities to launder money, to fund weapons trafficking, to fight the Cold War, etc. But the Soviets got really good at making this into a kind of a scientific technique. And you have to understand that from the vantage point of the government or the state, there's really no morals. It's an amoral world. And so from that vantage point, kind of anything goes. The justification is always, well, the opposition will be doing it, so we got to do it, right? So it's a kind of a Pandora's box that opens up the moral quandaries that really have been kind of antithetical to the history of Western civilization's tendency in terms of Christian, the ethics and the Christian ethos or the biblical ethos. Not to say that it didn't go on in the history of Western civilization. Obviously it did, but it was still something that was frowned upon. It was not seen to be ethically acceptable. In the Soviet Secret Service, if you go back to the Cold War, originally they had what was called SMERSH, and SMERSH was the organization that was set up by the Soviets to counter all foreign intelligence, the CIA, et cetera, or anyone else, British intelligence. And their dictum was death to spies. And so for the Soviet perspective, anything goes. There's no limitations. You could then entrap not just high-level officials who were heterosexual. It also required the training and the perfecting of gay ops, right? Fake and gay ops to also entrap high-level officials who had that kind of proclivity. And you can see why before the normalization that we have today of homosexual relationships, at a time when this was seen as scandalous and perhaps in some cases even illegal, that could be completely devastating. So if you could find a certain weakness in a person's life, especially if they were homosexual, this was a powerful way to control people. And for the Soviets, they even had a Marx Engels sex school that was set up even outside of Moscow to train operatives in these techniques. And if you've ever watched the show The Americans, it's an amazing show. It's one of the best TV shows, I think, ever, and certainly one of the best spy shows by far. And when we had the conversation with John Kiriakou, he recommends, you know, shows like The Americans. He thinks that they're really well done. And I was actually consulted on by people from the CIA because they wanted to make it, you know, pretty accurate. Obviously, there's way more packed into The Americans than any single Soviet illegals operation actually engaged in. But still, it's based loosely in reality. And what's funny is that if you watch the show, you will see there's certain episodes, I want to say maybe second or third season, where it flashes back to Clark and his wife's training. And they're actually put together as a couple by the Soviet government. They're not actually a couple. They're just a cover operation with a fake marriage, a cover marriage. But what's fascinating is that the Soviet, and this is actually what they did, the Soviets actually would create American suburbs. They would create an entire section of out in the middle of nowhere, a fake city, a fake suburb, fake movie theater, fake houses, all of that, to train the illegal operatives. They're called illegals, not illegal immigrants, but illegals in the sense of Soviet operatives, to train them to be a undercover, deep cover, long-term cell operation. And they actually made these fake neighborhoods. They were very similar to a Hollywood set, and they would train people to go and live and fully be American. This is what made the Soviet illegals program very successful. And as many historians of espionage note, the only other people that could compete with the Soviets for this type of espionage were, of course, the Israelis. Soviets and Israelis were very good at undercover illegal operations. The Soviets who enter this branch of the KGB are unaware sometimes of the training that they would undergo to the extent of the degradation that they would suffer by offering themselves for the service of their country. But it was also seen as part of, they were trained to believe it was part of their patriotic duty. Now you think, aha, this is so preposterous. This is so absurd. How could anybody think that you got to be a sex operative for your country? Well, are you aware of the many OSS and CIA recruits out of Hollywood over the years who were probably also asked to do certain types of things like this? In fact, there's a famous movie called Spy that you could watch on Prime or Netflix or whatever. And that's the case of Sophie, I forget her last name, but she was one of the most famous Allied cases of a honey trap. And the Allied powers asked her to, and she said no, and then they sort of forced her because they had her dad in prison. They forced her to engage in high-level honey trap operations with SS members. This, of course, ruined her career. Everybody thought she'd become a Nazi, and she lost her her livelihood and her reputation. But it later came out that she was forced into this. And she was one of the most famous actresses of the Nordic region. Forget where she was from. I think she was Swedish or something. But her case is classic because just like the Soviets, the Allies are also doing this. And does anyone remember that not too long ago, Fox News, Jesse Waters, many people were reporting on NATO having open discussions of recruiting Taylor Swift to do NATO public psyops. Now, I'm not saying that Taylor Swift is a honey trap for NATO or the CIA. I don't have any evidence of that. I'm just saying that it's not outside the realm of possibility, given the fact that a lot of A-list celebrities have actually been famously spies and recruited to spy. And we don't know all the details of what that might have involved. But at least in some of these cases, we do know that it involved being a honey trap and sleeping with people if you're told to do it. So is it possible then that perhaps some of the pop stars of the West might also be recruited into these types of things? It's very possible. And in fact, if you don't do what you're supposed to, you might not be alive. You might be unalived. Think of the case of Marilyn Monroe. When I interviewed Sammy the Bull, the most famous living hitman, present day gangster out there, Sammy said, when I was in the mafia, I wasn't around at the time of the assassin or the death, we should say, of JFK and Marilyn Monroe. But he always heard that, of course, the mafia had a role in Marilyn Monroe's untimely demise because she knew way too much, because she had slept with and was also probably used as a honey trap for information and gossip. Because she had slept with the Kennedys and the gangsters. She was the girlfriend of Sam Giancana or Momo, who was the head of the Chicago outfit. But she had also been with the Kennedys. And so knowing that much dirt, et cetera, and according to Sammy the Bull, because she had a serious pill problem, if she got too intoxicated sometimes, she might say too much. And so she was a liability. And that gives us then a motivation as to why she might have been unalived. The book discusses the art of blackmail. It's a very, it's a science to these people. So it's an amoral, immoral science. It's not viewed as something good or bad. It's viewed as a necessity. And according to Boer in his history book, just amongst the Soviets, amongst the KGB, there were hundreds of cases of high-level Americans and Westerns that had been compromised. For example, Che Guevara was even betrayed and compromised in a famous sexual operation case. And this was a woman named Laura Martinez, or her real name was Haiti Burke. But they blackmailed Che, and then he was betrayed. And this had a role in his assassination. A lot of people don't know that, but it really, anybody who comes to prominence, right, is potentially blackmailable. And it's not just any kind of prominence. Usually, especially during the Cold War, or during wartime, the compromising is people who are in key positions, right? You work at a naval installation and you know the specs on some new Navy ship, or you're working at the Air Force, or you're working at Raytheon or Boeing. That's usually the type of person that could be targeted. It's not typically going to be, any random person or even just some wealthy person. In fact, if you go to cases like Sukarno, this was the Indonesian Revolution. There was sexual compromise involved in that operation. So many famous instances in history are revolutions or overthrows or something like that. They've included these types of operations. And again, as we said, the KGB, for example, had an entire sex school. You could actually go to sex school where you get graded on, I guess, everything, right? And the idea back in the Cold War was that you also had to master these techniques of secretly filming people and secretly gaining the compromise. So it became, again, an entire sort of science. In 1955, the United States Army, through its Sergeant Glenn Rohrer, was assigned a heavily guarded compound that was used to train European and American agents behalf and behind the Iron Curtain. Located on a 12-acre site in West Germany, it was 10 miles from Frankfurt. It was known as Camp David, funny name. The primary purpose of this facility was to train black and gray agents. Full-time spies were known as blacks and operated in the Soviet-controlled countries under false identities. Grays were the businessmen, the tourists, and the journalists who agreed to take on a single espionage assignment for patriotism or for money. So you'll notice that the CIA was doing the exact same thing that the NKVD was doing. During this period, the KGB was involved in compromising many people amongst the NATO hierarchy. There were admirals. There were high-level military officials, generals, that became compromised. And quite often, I have to say, through their fake and gayness, right? So, yeah, you could compromise a person with a beautiful Russian model or a Ukrainian sex op. But the real goal, unfortunately, was when they were compromised via the gay stuff. And I have to thank
one of my good buddies,
because he actually bought me and sent me. This was the standard model that the KGB would use, and it's called the Minox B. And this is an actual tiny mini camera. Now, usually they would use these cameras for photographing documents, because it's not really the best for your prawn proclivities. But anyway, you get an idea. So this is how small this was back during the 1960s and 70s, maybe even the 50s. I forget when the first Minox came out. But this was the favorite of the KGB. And usually, again, this was to just take pictures of classified documents or something like that. But it could also conceivably be done for sexual operation compromise stuff as well. And that, but the Minox actually comes up in this discussion. We have, in the case of the FBI, for example, Richard Miller, the famous FBI agent, was convicted of espionage with Svetlana Ogorodnikova. We have the case of Robert Hansen. Right? I mean, there's many cases of this, but what's interesting, if you read about it, is how many of them were actually gay things, right? So many of these people, for example, amongst the British establishment, you had John Vassal, who was kind of closeted gay dude. But then once the Soviets found that out, the KGB was able to get pretty compromising information on a very high level British official. Unfortunately, amongst this dark side of things, there's also a pretty prevalent pedo element. And so this is why it's important to note this, because a lot of people, for example, were dismissing the Epstein situation as if it dealt with the pedo stuff or as if that was an issue. Well, this is necessary because I'm not saying it's necessary from, I'm saying from the vantage point of the establishment is necessary because they want to count, they want to cater to whatever that person's proclivities are. And so if you have a high level official who's into that and you want to get access to, you know, their files or their data or whatever, then you could see why the establishment would want to do that. I'm not arguing for that. I'm just saying that's the reality of it. And thus, because that's a reality, there's no reason why we should think that that wouldn't be involved in the Epstein case or in the Epstein files. In fact, in some cases, young boys were even used, as is discussed in several chapters here by Boer. And in the case of Japan, for example, as I've mentioned many times, this is not something new. This is not something Epstein figured out or Robert Maxwell figured out. There were Japanese operatives who 100 years ago were able to create what they called the Hall of Pleasurable Delights. And the Hall of Pleasurable Delights was utilized by this guy named Kenji Doihara, who was the master of Japanese espionage. He was a military figure who figured out that the way to actually win against China when they had the Chinese-Japanese war was to utilize the vices. To utilize the vices would mean to control the military and the people, not through overt kinetic means, but to get them so addicted to opium and the Japanese prostitutes that eventually the entire province that he invaded fell without a fight. General Kenji Doihara captured Peking, Shanghai, and Nanking with not much opposition due to all of the inside information that he had got his prostitute 304 informants to give him. And because so many of the Chinese army were addicted to opium, they were able to immediately just walk in and it was nothing. In the United States, it's a little bit of a different story because the State Department took over espionage in 1898. And at this time, they were utilizing Pinkerton private security. And this was the private security that was used against the South. In order to combat this, even the Confederates utilized sex spies. A woman who was considered the most beautiful woman of that time, I don't know who would think that, but anytime you see these 1800s women, they're looking rough. I mean, they look like your uncle. So the nines and the tens of the 1800s are like your uncle today. But this woman, Belle Boyd was the most famous Confederate spy, and she was a honeypot, honey trap. She would sleep with the Yankee soldiers and generals to try to get information, and apparently she was pretty successful. But that's not the only side that did that. In fact, there were spies amongst the Union and the Confederates who engaged in sex ops. So it wasn't just Belle Boyd. There were others. Guys, this is the Alex Jones Show live on Alex Jones Live Network. Be sure and follow Alex over at Alex Jones Live. Follow him on X. Follow him on Rumble, everywhere else. And I am Jay Dyer, your guest host. You can follow me at jaysanalysis.com. Get my books in the shop. We'll be right back.
Heard Alex Jones talk about some chemical that makes the frogs gay. Raise your hand. Turns out he wasn't wrong. When frogs were exposed to atrazine, some were chemically castrated and feminized. Genetic males developed female reproductive organs, and some even produced viable eggs. What is less known is this. Human exposure to atrazine in the womb is linked to genital malformations in men. Like when the pee hole isn't in the right place on the pee. And it even could be contributing to shrinking sizes. I am talking about micro becoming increasingly common. Despite this, atrazine, the micro chemical, is present in the drinking water of 40 million Americans. Europe banned it, we didn't. Talk about a war on masculinity.
Put another nickel in the Alex Jones was right jar.
The most important people to have stability and consistency would be businessmen. So he formed this trilateral commission of businessmen and politicians from three.
He's literally talking about how they made the fucking basically the Illuminati. This is, it's, so you literally have, so remember when I said this is like a dev video? What the f? It's literally just a dev video. Alex Jones was right about everything.
The most banned man in America, Alex Jones.
And I have to say, your willingness to platform or to have a conversation with Alex Jones, I think was a revolutionary act.
I'll tell you, that fucking guy is right about a lot of shit.
One of the things he was telling me was about fluoride and about the frogs when exposed that that went from male to female.
I don't like them putting chemicals in the water that turn the freaking frogs gay.
I went back to NBC. We had all these fact checkers. It was all true. We found out all this stuff he was saying was true. And here I am across from you, Harvard-educated Johns Hopkins attending physician, saying, yeah, fluoride, just like Alex Jones was saying, not good. It's crazy.
Alex Jones taught me about this 20 years ago. Listen.
He loves this country. He is a patriot. And he's somebody who we better listen to.
Alex Jones was right. I don't care how you slice it, dice it, flip it up, or rub it down. Alex Jones was right.
Been right about the poison shots and raised the main alarm, and right about the open borders, and right about the wars, and right about the entire agenda. That's why the bad guys want us off air. And that's why it's such a revolutionary act when you take the live feed from Real Alex Jones on X or on Rumble at AJN Live. That's the new site on Rumble. Hundreds of thousands followed just last day. I want to thank all you that did at AJN Live there. Follow us there. Get the free app for the Droid and for Apple for your phone at alexjonesapp.com. This is a revolutionary act. Share it on your email list, your text message list. Tell those you share it to share it. That creates the chain reaction. And then support us at thealexjonesstore.com. When you support us, we are absolutely unstoppable. Become a VIP at thealexjonesstore.com because you get $40 to spend in the store each month, special deals, special offers, special sales on everything on top of it. Cancel anytime. Stand with us. All of our victories are shared together. It's because of you. Take action now at realalexjones.com and thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, alexjoneslive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. Follow me over at X as Jay Dyer. Follow me on YouTube, Jay Dyer. Go check out the John Kiriakou interview that we did. We're talking about espionage and the reality of sexual blackmail and sexual entrapment. We covered this a couple of years ago. It got forgotten. People aren't really talking about it. So I want to bring it back to the forefront because this is a huge component of how governments get subverted, how the West gets subverted. And you might think, oh, well, okay, that's interesting that there's these, you know, people in government, people in embassy, people in the embassies, people in corporations that get targeted or the military. But what does that have to do with day-to-day life? It doesn't really matter. Well, the whole country is actually being sexually blackmailed and subverted through the gender nonsense, through the brainwashing that we get in the public education system. So you're actually kind of getting a macrocosm application of this principle that happens with individuals. And that's why it's important to understand the history of what has really gone on in warfare. Warfare is not just tanks and guns and soldiers. There's economic warfare. There's cultural warfare. There's fifth generational warfare. There's all different types of warfare. And we're not in the world where we don't have to deal with these things anymore. Like, oh, it's the 1980s, it's the 90s, everything's cool. We just have Desert Storm. We're actually going into a potentiality of a new world war. This could go even worse. Situation in the Middle East, the situation with Russia and Ukraine, Iran, et cetera. We could go into worse, larger conflicts. And if we do, all of these types of things will be even worse. They'll be even more ramped up. As the economy gets worse, people will be turning more and more to prostitution. So this happens not just at a high level, it also happens on a cultural, wide, broad level. Going back to the idea of famous people or models or sex operatives, one of the most famous cases that most people don't know about of espionage was the Eastman Kodak girl. This was during World War I. The Germans had quite a few espionage networks, both before and after World War I in the U.S. And Mina, the famous Eastman Kodak girl, sort of a pinup girl. Well, she was used as a sex op, as a spy. There's the case of Amy Pack, sex operative, handled by intrepid William Stevenson. She was actually key to aiding the U.S. in getting information on the Nazis at the time of World War II. She sent spy information to MI6 and to American intelligence through William Stevenson, who helped set up the OSS together with Ian Fleming and others, with Bill Donovan. So the argument that was used back at the time of the Cold War as to why we have to do this is, well, look, we're entering into the atomic age. The nukes are everywhere, so guess what? We got to do all the sex ops, right? Nukes outweigh the sex ops, so they're necessary. In the case of Alger Hiss, that's also a sex op case because the supposed passing of Soviet of nuclear or atomic technology to the Soviets involved, of course, sexual operations as well. The father of modern spycraft is known as this character, Sir Francis Walsingham, and he was a famous British spy at the time of Queen Elizabeth. And he was actually a very keen intelligence operative because he was able to uncover the plot of a Roman Catholic named Anthony Babington, who had planned the assassination of Queen Elizabeth. And he was going to restore Mary, Queen of Scots, to the throne. Through this spy network, he managed to get details on the spy plot that the Catholics had engineered at this time. And there was also one of the first famous female double agents, and I don't know how to pronounce her name, but her name is Madame L. De Carrel. So a French operative, a French spy, Louise de Carrel, who served Louis XIV of France as a secret agent, who also served Charles II as his mistress. So she was sleeping with multiple heads of state in order to get information. And it was successful. This had to do, again, at that time with a lot of Protestant versus Catholic warfare. But that's, again, illustrating the point that this is not immune to regions or areas or groups that claim religious affiliation. British intelligence, in fact, was founded, for those that don't know, the modern British Secret Service was founded out of the Boer Wars. And, of course, the Rothschilds actually funded that. And the British SIS is what would become MI5 or MI6. And out of this, there was also another famous sex case. There was an operative name, or there was an operation called Operation Lena. And this, again, dealt with sex ops. So over and over and over, we see that a lot of these key historical events, be it wars, be it the fall of empire, be it whatever it is, in many, many cases, it also involves sex ops. For example, again, we think that, oh, this was something the Soviets and the Chinese did. In the case of Winston Churchill, people don't know that Churchill had a famous brothel. So Churchill was all about them hoes. Churchill said, when we go into France, we need to make a deal to take over all of the brothels in France to get German intelligence when the German soldiers and high command go and sleep with the hoes. And that's exactly what happened. Prime Minister Edward Heath, the famous horrible Heath lineage of the, again, this is all some of the worst stuff out of the UK. Prime Minister Edward Heath, in terms of his Lambton indiscretions, requested and received RAF minister's resignation after it came out that Lord Jellicoe's name appeared in the black book of one of the compromise prostitutes. The Norma Russell affair, which dealt with the Mayfair escort agency, included the name of Lord Jellicoe, and this required his resignation. MI5, for example, had also set up brothels in Belfast to entrap the IRA. And I think back in the day, Alex even had on somebody involved in Operation Steak Knife. And Operation Steak Knife was the MI5 operation to take down the IRA, which ended up being successful because they ended up basically running the IRA. But what's not usually discussed or known is that the MI5 had made a deal with a Jewish gangster named Bernie Silver, who had set up the brothels throughout Ireland. And so they were actually getting information through the IRA bros going to the brothels and talking too much after getting drunk, and the prostitutes were all in on it. So they were getting info. The pillow talk. It says, once the IRA discovered the purpose of these brothels, they went and launched an attack on them. Several British agents were then killed, and an MI5 abandoned using the brothels. So, again, everybody hears about multiple famous, you know, there's classic BBC documentaries about Operation Steak Knife, all of which are great. You should watch them because they're very instructive on this kind of, but it doesn't really go into the Jewish brothels in Ireland that were used by British intelligence. There was a case of Anthony Courtney, famous former naval officer and member of parliament, who admired the Soviets, liked the Soviets a lot. In 1961, he went and met Zinaida Volkova, who was a KGB swallow operative. And he, of course, he slept with her and was entrapped. And eventually this led to the downfall and entrapment, I believe, of 50 different Western agents and operatives who were entrapped through this one Anthony Courtney debacle at this time in the early 1960s. We have also the case of the Profumo affair. This is one of those famous cases in British establishment of a person being entrapped and sleeping with what appears to be a Soviet sex operative or operation or compromise. But again, most people don't even think about that anymore. But there was another case that you may, and this one is unfortunate because it really speaks to today. And there's a John, I just went blank on the director who directed Videodrome. I just went blank on his name, but he also did a movie called M. Butterfly. And I don't recommend this one, but it turns out that M. Butterfly was a Chinese honey trap, and this was under Mao Zedong, and it was a dude. There was a guy named Xi Pai Pu. Yes, his name is Xi Pai Pu, who was a trans person. And Xi Pai Pu was so convincing as a woman that he was able to entrap a Western, forget the person's name. Entrap somebody in the West And apparently this Western person who was entrapped by Xi Pi-Poo never knew that this was a dude, even though they had sex. So I don't want to know the details of that because it sounds gross, but somehow they never supposedly figured out that they were entrapped by a dude. Anyway, again, you can see that this is not new. The famous spy case of Richard Sorge was one of the most effective Soviet operatives. He was actually undone by an Axis spy. Yeah, Xi Pi-Poo. The most famous Soviet operative was undone by an Axis spy who was a geisha girl. I think this is right. Her name was Kiyomi. And Kiyomi ended up entrapping Richard Sorge and being his downfall. As a result of this, SMERSH, which is Death to All Spies, the Soviet counter-espionage agency, which, by the way, is what's the enemy in the first few James Bond stories, that becomes Spectre. In the real world, SMERSH then retaliated by killing the geisha dancer Kiyomi. In World War II, dozens and dozens of women were used to entrap SS operatives. 12 of these 53 apparently known women, according to Bauer, were then killed by the Soviets. And speaking of this, there is a really good movie that's a French film. It has Sophie Marceau in it. I forget the name of the director, but it's about the women spies recruited by British intelligence in France to go against the Nazis. And I think they kind of hint at this operation in that film, that the women were also expected, if needed, to sleep with the SS, to sleep with the Nazis. The Austro-Hungarian Empire, it had a famous gay traitor that was entrapped. And that's a crazy story. You can read about that in Bauer's book as well. By the way, I have a longer discussion of this book on my channel if you want to go find my sexpionage, a discussion on YouTube. But what's interesting is that the whole chapter on the gay ops, the reason that this was very effective and that gays were targeted, or closeted gays were targeted, is that according to the intelligence agencies themselves at this time, the gays were profiled as disloyal narcissists. And because they were addicted to the vice, they were seen to be morally defective and thus easily able to flip. And thus the KGB became very adept at gay ops and entrapping gay people. For example, Tom Dreiberg was a famous gay Czechoslovakian KGB operative who entrapped gay people in the British establishment. Labour MP, 1942, etc. And this also then transitions into the famous Cambridge spy ring. There have been many, many movies, documentaries, countless books about the Cambridge spy ring, right? You've probably seen Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, based on John le Carré with Gary Oldman. That's based on the Cambridge spy ring story. Well, that was all gay ops. They were all essentially part of the Cambridge Apostles ring, which was a bunch of gay and PDF people in the British establishment. So why would it seem strange that Maxwell would be recruiting Jeff Stein McGeoffrey to engage in the exact same operation when for all of these years throughout the Cold War, Burgess, McLean, Blunt, Philby, they were already part of a giant PDF ring. And in this case, they weren't into dudes. They weren't into girls. It was little boy PDF stuff. Eden, Blunt, McLean, Burgess, Philby. And many people argue that perhaps Churchill, and perhaps also that Lord Rothschild, was involved in running this compromise for both sides. That's a thesis that many people have as to who the other Cambridge spy was. There's this unknown, mysterious other person of the spy ring. Could it have been Lord Rothschild himself, Lord Victor Rothschild, who worked for British intelligence and was also involved in the gay ops? I don't know if he himself was gay, but the point is that this was known to be a technique being used at this time. How do we get all of these gays in power, right? This is a key point, and this is why it's very important for movements to be compromised by having Skittles leaders amongst their ranks. And this is a number one component as to why you can't allow that. And they even understood this decades in the past. They understood that the reason you can't have gay leaders and Skittles leaders is because they are narcissistic, disloyal, and thus can be easily compromised and controlled. It's very cut and dry. It's very simple. But apparently today, this has all been forgotten because people don't even care if the leaders amongst these various groups happen to be openly gay. And this happens all the time. I'm speaking mainly of normie conservatives and how often this happens amongst, you know, GOP and this kind of stuff, who are now, well, we're open big tent conservatives. You can't have that because people that are that have these proclivities are easily compromisable. There's the famous case of Klaus Fuchs, which is another compromise operation. This had to do with, if I recall, Soviet atomic secrets again, stealing them. In some cases, the compromise just included nude pictures, which is interesting because although we don't know if this is true, there have been for many years stories that Karol Wojtyla or John Paul II was filmed and photographed in terms of nude pictures, and that this might explain some of his actions in regard to why he was so easily swayed by whatever the CIA said to do during the Cold War. There was another famous Soviet spy ring that was busted that was a sex op. And the woman involved was named Judith Copeland. She was a radical leftist Soviet convicted of spying for Russia. And she tried a love story defense. However, this defense failed, and she was still given 10 years in prison. She was also helping the Soviet United Nations networks because the Soviets had actually infiltrated the United Nations with what's was reportedly 500 or so spies. And many of them were actually sex operatives and sex ops. So by the 1960s, there were around what was suspected to be 500 United Nations Soviet spies. That would make up about one third of the United Nations delegates at that time. Thus, the United Nations, which was a hive of sex pot honey trap operations, they began to promote and advocate for Democrat, leftist, socialist policies, especially in the United States. They were also utilizing human trafficking at this time to get some of these operatives and some of these delegates, one of whom was called, or one of whom was, that was involved was a compromise operation with Harry Allen Towers. These were known as the Towers Girls. And this was a KGB entrapment operation utilizing the United Nations. As a result of this, eventually dozens of Soviet spies that were discovered were expelled. Many of them were also gay, faking gay. Thus, the United Nations became a feast for spies, according to Donald Boer. Asia was also very adept at this. For many centuries, Asians in Asian countries, whether it's Japan or China or wherever, Southeast Asia, they had actually set up secret societies based around sex and sex secrets. And they were able to utilize these techniques for centuries for compromise. In fact, there were whole languages and networks that sex spies had created using T codes, that is like tea, like drinking, like tea, reading the tea leaves, one of which was called the Black Ocean Society. So the Black Ocean Society was a secret society amongst the Far East that had perfected the technique of sex languages and sex ops. In some cases, Russian operatives were able to foil Japanese ravens. So in the Russo-Japanese War, this happened as well. In the case of Israeli intelligence, they were very adept at this. There are many cases mentioned. And in when you would have, for example, some of the defectors, before I get to this with Israelis, you would have some defectors who would say that many of the KGB operations were really just successful because of gay stuff. So I think when Anatoly Golitsyn, a defector from the KGB, his claim was that the KGB was really only successful mainly through their homosexual operations. Israeli intelligence was successfully deploying agents, female agents, for many years, many decades, to obtain information not just from the West, but also amongst the Soviets. One of the most famous cases with Ellie Cohen, who became a Mossad agent and infiltrated Syria at the highest levels. So they were utilizing sex ops amongst the Syrian elite and also in Egypt. They were able to compromise some of the Ba'athist party members early on through gay ops. But it turns out Ely Cohen was a master spy, one of the most famous cases, but ended up being outed and caught and was hung in Damascus by the Syrian authorities. There was also a case of a German Jew who posed as a Nazi and was able to undo a bunch of Nazi operations. And this was a person named Lotz, L-O-T-Z, Lotz, Wolfgang Lotz, was able to successfully undo Egyptian operations against Israel by posing as an SS person. Now, that's a whole 200 pages right there of history of espionage summarized in a few decades, all the way up just to World War II and the Cold War. Does anybody actually think that this just stopped after the Cold War? And that, of course, it didn't stop. In fact, we had many cases of senators, congresspeople being compromised by, for example, Chinese operatives. But it's not any different when it comes to Epstein, who's working at a higher level, as we can see, compromising people at all levels, not just for Israel, but also for Western intelligence in general. So that's the reality of how the world works. This is the Alex Jones Show, and I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer. Go to alexjoneslive.com, support Alex on X, on Rumble, everywhere else. Go to jaysanalysis.com, and you can get my book in the shop. Find copies at jaysanalysis.com.
Your arm been hacked off by a homeless person with a samurai sword? Try Shilajit gummies today.
A guy in Venice Beach just got his arm nearly hacked off by some tweaker with a samurai sword. And as of 4:15, he is still on the loose. And seemingly, the reaction from our local government is basically like, oh, shit, like, these things just happen. Like, this is what we're, this is our new normal. F that, dude. I want to live in an LA that is safe to go out, where I don't have to worry about walking around and getting my arm hacked off by some tweaker looking for drugs.
Sorry, I ate a Shilajit gummy. Sorry, I thought I could finish it before that clip was over. You caught me. Shilajit gummies, folks. We're not joking. They're very good. Shilajit gummies. Are you a leftist idiot that thinks it's normal that men get their arms chopped off with swords when trying to go to the beach in California? Shilajit gummies are for you. Consumers of Shilajit gummies, they know places to avoid. If you want to avoid having your arm nearly cut off by a sword in Venice Beach, California, you need to be taking Shilajit gummies today. I do love these things. They are really delicious, but they really do give you a kick. And you only get to take one. This is the worst part of Shilajit gummies, is you want to take multiple, but you're only supposed to take one. You can take more if you want. Also, I love the Modern World Survival Stack, a massive discount if you get three products together. It's the Shilajit capsules, the Atomic Defense, and the CMOS capsules, which are packed with vitamins, minerals to support overall wellness, thyroid health, and immune function. The Atomic Defense is for daily defense and cellular support, while Shilajit capsules support natural energy, stamina, and daily vitality. Get one or all of them now at thealexjonesstore.com. Share the links at alexjoneslive.com and on Rumble at thealexjonesshowlive.com. Shilajit.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.